You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, Director of the Tucker Center. The Tucker Center, if you don't know about it, is a first of its kind, world-class research center and thought leader that accelerates systems change for girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I talk to, amplify, and support my female colleagues, amazing women who study sport and gender. We let data tell the story and talk about research and the ways that we are changing the world through the context of sport to be a better place.
Okay, welcome everybody. Thanks for tuning in to a discussion with the Disruptors. I'm talking with my colleagues and fellow disruptors on the screen. And if you're listening in via audio, Drs. Nancy Lowe, Ann Pegorero, Katie LaBelle, Dunia Antunovich, and Jada Mumju. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
So for 2 years, we've been we're in a COVID time warp, so it could have been 5 years, but for over 2 years, we have been discussing with each other weekly. We've been writing pieces. We've recorded some podcasts about disruptions to the normative model of sport that we argue is created by and for men, run by men, and upholds the privilege hierarchy and the status quo of men's sports in relation to women's sports. So we've been talking about this for a long time. And what's cool is we all come from different perspectives, multidisciplinary perspectives. So today, friends, we're talking about our new report that we just released. That's a culmination of all our hard work. Well, it's the starting point of all our hard work. Disruptors, driving a new model for women's sport, which has been a labor of love for all of us. And we're excited to tell you more about it. And if you haven't read it, you can download it for free at tuckercenter.org or just Google Disruptors driving a new model for women's sport and you will find it. So before we get going, everyone, since we are recording this on March 28th, 2022, and we're in the heat of March Madness and Minneapolis is hosting the women's Final Four next weekend. So I'm all things basketball right now. Did everybody do a bracket?
No.
Raise your hand if you did a bracket. What?
I'm embarrassed of what has happened to my bracket, but yes.
Wow. Okay. So not role modeling good things about women's sport. You have to do a bracket. Okay. Now, aside from the fact that we've already epically failed, who do we have winning the women's Final Four?
South Carolina.
I have South Carolina.
I do too.
I'm pushing for Stanford.
Okay. And
yeah, I think I'm pushing for Stanford, although I think both have Canadians on them. So it's South Carolina and Stanford are the ones that, and UConn still has a Canadian. And they're still in it, but Stanford, I think that I like the way they play.
Dunia, do you have an opinion on this very important question?
I do not. I'll just sit back and see what happens.
Oh!
Fence sitter!
Fair enough. All right.
Dunia, go out on a limb and say Michigan.
Ooh. Yeah, Big Ten.
They haven't punched their ticket yet. So that would be a real limb.
Oh, that's happening tonight.
You can cheer for the Ryerson Rams in Canada who are going for the national championship here too. So you could just go way out on a limb.
Are those the women Rams there? Of course they are.
Oh.
Yeah. Lots of women Rams.
No, not named women. It's Ryerson Rams women's basketball. So Ryerson Rams men's basketball. So we're labeling. We are a step ahead of the curve labeling.
As Canadians usually are.
A side note, quick question. So the three of us filled a bracket. Where did you place your bracket? I use just women's sports bracket.
Oh, mine's on the ESPN Tournament Challenge app, which was moderately better than it's been in the past. I could actually find it and use it this year easily. Katie, where'd you put yours?
Sports. I did just women's. It came in my inbox. It was handy.
Right?
Oh. It was very handy.
Well, there you go. So how do we find the bracket? How do we consume the bracket? How do we use it? I would argue having the women's bracket show up in your inbox in a women-focused sports newsletter is a disruption in and of itself. So we have a lot to talk about. So let's get going here. So clearly there's been an upheaval and a lot of changes in the sports industry. And today I want us to unpack some of these points of change in women's sport and sport in general that are being influenced by digital disruptions, which is what we outline in the report. And so before we get to disruptors driving a new model for women's sport, you know, we're getting a lot of questions about why did we decide to write this report? It's not a typical academic report. It's more of a white paper. It's free. It's publicly accessible. It's not behind a paywall. It's written for a public audience, but it's evidence-based. So why did we decide to do this?
Well, I'll jump in first. I mean, it's a long-held narrative that we are trying to debunk at its core. So that long-held narrative is the one that says, you know, people are not interested in women's sport, which clearly is already being, we're seeing evidence with every game in the tournament that people are interested in women's sport. But what's gone on for years is that women haven't been given the equal resources that men's sport has been given, and the mainstream model that has been used to support men's sport was just kind of that lift and shift, let's do it for women's sport. And we can see now at this very important time that it hasn't worked. It just simply hasn't worked for women's sport. And so what we as a team have looked at is what is working for women's sport and what does the new model actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, it's about that exactly what Nancy said is the noisy narrative that's always out there that says nobody's interested in this. And for me, it's like, and I go back to that signals versus noise. We did this, I think, to identify all the signals that show that the noise is wrong. Like we needed to drown out the noise with the data. And as you always say to us, Nicole, let's let the data tell the story, right? And I think that's exactly what we wanted to do with this report is bring all the signals to the forefront and quiet the noise out there that constantly drives that same old tired narrative that there's no interest in women's sport.
Absolutely. There's a few other reasons why we did this report. Who else wants to weigh in on that?
I would jump in too, and just, you know, as a follow-up, we had actually published an academic paper back in the fall. And so we're kind of practicing what we preached in that paper. One of the big findings was that as academics, we're not packaging some of our findings as well as we could be. So this was a real intentional effort on our part to make some of our work more accessible to a broader variety of stakeholders so that we can try to push that narrative that Nancy and Anne spoke of, but also just open up that accessibility to the information.
And I think it is also important to point out that, you know, maybe the folks out in the industry or general public are seeing a disruptor here, a disruptor there, but maybe not piecing it all together. With the report that we put together, actually, it provides a more comprehensive view and actually taps into a variety of ways that this new model is emerging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just to add and elaborate a little bit more on that, we are seeing that industry reports are now starting to include data on women's sport, which is a disruption in itself. Mm-hmm. And in this report, we're really trying to bring together and put industry data in conversation with research findings that scholars have been observing really for decades. As the readers will find, we use specific examples and highlight some examples that illustrate these disruptions. And so putting these different pieces into conversation was another important point of this report.
Yeah, and I think to Katie's point is we really felt it important that we as academics try to bridge the industry academic gap and really model and practice what we preach to be better public scholars and to work with industry colleagues if and when they would like to work with us. So, Nancy, you sort of gave us a high-level overview about why this report now. Is there anything else anybody wants to jump in on? It's like, you know, why we did the report, but why this report now, and why a new model of women's sport?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. I think the timing is incredibly important. So in addition to us as scholars, you know, providing the research, and as Dunya said, along with the industry now including data and even writing some of their own reports, we're seeing the visibility with like Sue Bird and the number of commercials that she's on, and then the Buick campaign that's happening right now, where they actually let people come to understand that there has been incredible events in women's sport, right? Buzzer beater kinds of things during the NCAA tournament that they've missed because the media hasn't been covering it. So I think it's a convergence of things coming together that points to this being just the most opportune time for us to collaborate as a diverse team, right? With multiple perspectives, and bring that industry data to bear into this report, but also make it accessible beyond just our, you know, group of scholars who tend to read the same things all the time, but not get it to a wider audience.
And Dunya, you wrote the piece on sort of more of a broad sociocultural positionality of why this report matters now. Can you just fill us in on why that piece, contextualizing this piece, matters?
Yes, certainly. So the sociocultural context matters for women's sports over the last few years, and especially in the late 2010s or so. We saw a momentum, right? And that is evidenced by visibility of women's sports on media platforms. But also this is happening within a broader context where gender equality gained visibility, whether it's in relation to the film industry or in ad campaigns. Like sponsors are using gender equality to talk about their products and mission, right? And so we're seeing a little bit more attention on ideas of gender equality and on social change when it comes to gender-related issues, and over the last couple of years in terms of issues of race as well. And so women's sports is happening, and women's sports changes in women's sports are happening within that larger context that shapes, I think, the way also we talk about women's sports, right? That shapes these narratives about women's sport. And I know the rest of the team can chime in with specific examples of what this looks like, but women's sports are not isolated from these broader changes and are really building upon these changes to drive audiences, to bring new fans, and to change the story that really dominated the narratives over the last few decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with the pandemic, all the effects COVID's had on sport and women's sport in general, you know, the sort of backlash against women and women's rights and women's bodies, the 50th anniversary of Title IX, there's just a lot going on in so many spaces that I think this paper is particularly even more relevant than maybe what we thought it would be at the outset when we started this. And I know one of the factors that's sort of driving this change is the generational difference. So Katie, talk talk to us about how Gen Z and maybe future generations are driving these digital disruptions.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, I mean, you opened the podcast talking about how sport has been designed by men and for men. I think it's important to acknowledge, though, that the traditional sport model has also very much favored the baby boomer generational cohort. And they've been an incredibly loyal audience, and they have supported the broad commercialization of sport over the years. But just because something has worked well, and we say this in the report, just because something has worked well in the past doesn't mean it's going to work forever. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit. You know, the disruption we're seeing among next gen fans, I would probably include millennials and Gen Z together. The idea is that they're playing the game by new rules. They've been raised as digital natives. They've got different values. We're witnessing different types of sport consumption. They're just really embracing a new approach to sport. And I think something that was also really interesting that I read the report again, would have maybe included in the next version, is that it, you know, we talk about all of these different, you'll hear from some of the different co-authors here, but what's the common thread among all of these disruptions is that in many cases, they're being led by people from Gen Z or millennial generational cohorts. So if they don't like something, if they're not able to consume something in the way they want to consume it, they're disrupting by building something new, which is maybe another, again, if I could have another draft, I probably would have included in that, but there's just this generation, they've got a new approach and they're building the infrastructure to support that new approach.
Mm-hmm. And what I didn't do in the beginning was sort of define what we mean by digital disruption. So there's a whole theoretical framework around what this is. So just real simple, because you can read the full version at tuckercenter.org if you want to download the report. But the digital disruption is defined and framed as rapid, turbulent, ubiquitous systems change induced by digital innovation. So to your point about Gen Z, they'll just go and create whatever they want if they can't find it or don't like it. That leads to the erosion of boundaries, which I think we would argue is the traditional status quo model of sport. So that's when we're talking about digital disruptions, audience, that's what we mean here. So what else is disruptive about what's happening in the landscape?
Well, I think if you just go off what Katie said, I'll talk a little bit about what I see, I think, from fans. So women's sport fans, we've always had to hunt for the game, right? To watch our players, to be able to consume sports. So we've been in this digital disruption world for a long time, whether it's been in forums or chat rooms or whatever, to try to find a way to consume sport, to talk about the athletes that we follow. And so anytime it's an obscure channel, we'll chase it down and we'll find it. And so I think that behavior was there in women's sports fans long before we're seeing it in this next gen, right? We were always all in the digital channels trying to find this. And that's why I think we see really great numbers. Anytime you put a woman's game on in any sport, on any type of mode, whether it's Twitch or something, people are going to find it and watch it because we're used to having to hunt for that. So we already have that behavior. Now we're seeing the industry meeting us where we are as fans. And that's led to a bigger disruption. They're finally realized these fans exist. They exist in areas that are non-traditional, meaning we're not watching CBS Sports. We're watching Twitch or YouTube or something. So go find us where we are. And I think to me, it came full circle this morning when I saw, and I hate to sort of say it this way, but when I saw people from men's sport talking about how now we need to go where the fans are, we need to figure out how to go where they are as opposed to these traditional broadcast deals. And I'm like, well, we've been doing this for a long time in women's sport and we've shown the model works and now they want to follow it. So that to me was one of those signals, although necessarily give credit to them, but this is what we've been doing as women's sport fans. And I think women's sports finally capitalized on it in the last year.
Yeah, and I think I'll add to that, and just by saying capitalized on it by multiple streaming options, right? And bigger broadcast contracts and more investment in women's sport. I think that at the core, that's one of the things we have to drive home is the need for investment in women's sport. and all of this that's been done for years and all, and this shifting generational change is what's leading to more investment in women's sport, which we've been needing all along.
And it's not just investment for the sake of this is corporate social responsibility. This is investment with a return, right? That's what I think that to me is the report does, is pulls out the return and says, this is no longer just the right thing to do because of society or whatever issues we want to couch it in. It's actually a financial return model. And I think that's another aim from the report, from my perspective, is that we're able to show that this investment that Nancy talks about is a return. And we're seeing that with things like Angel City FC. We're seeing it with some large sponsorships coming into the WNBA and the raising of 75 million. I mean, now we're actually seeing these are investments. This isn't just corporate social responsibility or the right thing to do. It's going to bring money back to your pockets.
Yeah, and I think the report also highlights in some ways that first mover advantage of the people that are investing in women's sports. And that's not something that can be underestimated. You've got you've got Google, some of the biggest names out there, they're not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because they see the data. And that's another signal perhaps to just show, the potential and maybe to encourage people to stop leaving money on the table.
Katie, I'll follow up on that because I think that's one of the really significant digital disruptions that wasn't in the report, probably came about after our writing, but what Google has done, right? With this March Madness, now when you actually use Google to search March Madness, you're going to find content on women's basketball. That never happened before. And that's because Google acknowledged that their algorithms were gender biased. And, you know, they didn't know that until they really did a deep dive and someone prompted them to say, hey, you know, what's going on here? So, you know, talk about a digital disruption. The fact that a search engine like Google is now becoming more or reducing their gender bias, right? And investing in women's sport. Those are two really big shifts.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me? Because I just switched mics. Okay. One just quick thing, and I think this is a different podcast. I don't want to get us off tangent. I want to stick on the thing, but just a note. So as I'm watching all this basketball, which is amazing because we can see it on linear TV or I can tape it and skip the commercials, although that's a problem, I'm sure, for some sponsors. We can talk about that. But there's so many commercials now about women's sport, women's empowerment, you know, like, oh my gosh, this companies have found women's sport. Isn't this great? Which is great. And is it problematic? And is it going to be problematic because it's not authentic? It's more bandwagony, or they're only doing it for the ROI. And because of Gen Z, because they're value driven and they sniff out authenticity pretty quickly, is this going to backfire on some of these companies? So I've just been thinking about that in terms of our disruptions model, but maybe that's for a different discussion.
Nicole comes in and rains on the parade. She just rains on the parade. Oh, what? I mean. Can we have our day and then we can talk about how
okay. It might pick up? All right, we're having our day. We're having our day of disruptions in women's sport, and this is, you know, pro women's empowerment, and we're not going to take too much of a critical perspective. I know Dunia's chomping at the bit.
I was just going to say, Dunia wants to come in. This is where she shines.
My mic was unmuted 30 seconds ago. I will just add that it depends, right? So there is some work in sports sociology out there that really critically unpacks these messages and asks the question of these empowerment messages and visibility of social issues in ads, in particular, do they create social change, with a little bit more skepticism than perhaps what we are seeing in other areas of scholarship or scholarship that looks at the consequences of this messaging for brand loyalty, purchase intentions, and so forth. So what I will just add is to the listeners, stay tuned for some of our future work on additional data on the implications of these messages for sport organizations and for women's sport.
Yeah.
And I'll add, coming from that marketing perspective, that research has showed us that corporate activism will boost the stock price by 1% and sales by 10% if the values align with their consumers. That's the big if. And in opposition to that, if it's misaligned, it will lower the stock price. So to some degree, you know, you do it right, you'll see the benefit. You do it wrong and you're just performative, the consumers will see through you.
I'll add just one more data point on top of that little string. But I mean, if we're looking at the Gen Z audience, they're making up 40% of global consumers. And one of the top issues to them is sexism and other forms of related discrimination. So I think, again, we're seeing signals of other big brands and properties rolling out new ad campaigns around women's sport. Again, it's not just necessarily, like, they're seeing, they're trying to meet this next influential cohort where they are and deliver to them. I'm not sure that they'll be able to afford or continue to afford to be inauthentic with that, because again, we know this generation sees through that. So I think that they're going to have their feet held to the fire just by way of the way this generation is kind of playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking about the fan. Let's pivot here to talk about the female athlete agency in this new model of women's sport. So Jada, what can you start us off with this discussion? What do we know about the female athlete in this model?
I mean, I think they are really in the driving seat. If you look at it, they are the sport property that is shining more so than the leagues or the teams need these days, you know, recently. So the athletes are driving, as you know, the consumption, the fan affinity and endorsement deals, right? So from there on, I think, you know, those are merging everything that we have discussed, right? So they are the focal point for the audience or the sport fans or the Gen Z. And they are also the focal point for the sponsors, right? Because they are bringing the authenticity as giving a, you know, window to their lives and the values and what they stand up for. And those are creating opportunities for, you know, better advertisement value or better sponsorship deals where they can be speaking for the brand itself while also being known as the authentic folks to the Gen Z, right? So I think they are really driving all the changes as the sport property.
One thing,
yeah, I think they've done a lot of heavy lifting. These women athletes that we're looking at now done a lot of heavy lifting. There's still lots who haven't reaped the benefits. They certainly have paved the road for the next group that's coming up. And we're seeing them set some boundaries. I mean, Ash Barty just retired as the number one tennis player in early 20s, saying she's had enough of the pressures of the game. She's earned enough money and she may come back, who knows, but she's decided this is the time for her to exit. So I think now with this newfound, I guess both media and economic power, athletes are able to make decisions that work for them and operate in the system. The downside is, I think we need to know that the heavy lifting they've done, the constant need to be on and be an entrepreneur and using your platforms has shown some downsides. If we stay in tennis, we've seen some athletes struggle with this in Naomi Osaka, and we've got to think about that in terms of, we want them to be successful and we like what the agency they have now, but there's a lot that goes with that that potentially we don't see men having to do the same in their athletic career. So it's a positive and a negative. And we, when we think about this in terms of the model, need to figure out how this continues to roll out in a positive way for these athletes.
That's a good point. And just to piggyback on that is, if female athletes who have always had to sort of be their own best marketer because of the lack of attention of sponsorship and marketing and media, it puts the onus on them. It gives them agency, but there's a cost to that. But then, so it's maybe good and not good for the female athlete, the individual female athlete, where they're creating their own brand. But if you're Gen Z and you want to follow female athletes, not so much a team or a sport, then it's placing increased demand on female athlete agency in the system that precisely may not be health promoting for them. So
I think that's something we should think about moving forward.
Yeah, I think this was the first step. I mean, we documented a lot of disruptions. We're documenting the signals that we're seeing happen in the industry. The next step is to be able to make sure this is sustainable. And right now, I think that we've had these women athletes, you know, thinking outside of the box, figuring out how to get attention, figuring out how to get sponsorship dollars. We need to start building the infrastructure to support them and make this a sustainable model as phase two of this evil plan that we're trying to develop here. And I think that I think that can't start too early, right? I think we're already, I mean, these athletes have been through a lot. You look at even, you know, the U.S. women's national team, and in Canada, I mean, we don't even have a domestic professional league. We're putting such a burden on these athletes to play at the most elite level, but also develop the professionalization and different opportunities in women's sport and develop the branding and the sponsorship and all of that. And for this to really truly be a sustainable thing that will, you know, have lasting power, we're going to need to step up and build out that infrastructure to help support these women.
But isn't that the next place to invest though, Katie? I think that's a great point. Like if you're looking, everybody's thinking about, oh, do I buy a franchise? Do I help build a league? Why don't you build the infrastructure that Tom Brady talked about in his recent interviews, like where he has an entire team that does his social media for him. He's got three people who are crafting pictures and messaging. Why are we not doing that? That's the instant return that we can both get financially, but also support to these athletes. Start building out these small agencies, even one person per an athlete that starts doing this. Now, some of them do when the big sponsors come to the table, but they should be bringing this. Bring the dollars to the athlete, let them focus on their sport, build the infrastructure to support the business model the athletes already started to build. That's a great point, Katie. That's what we need to do. And that's where you're going to make some money right now, if anyone's out there listening.
Well, and also imagine the caliber of sports too. I mean, they're already the best athletes in the world. If they didn't have to worry about all of these other things, imagine the energy they'd be able to devote to their sport, right? Women athletes have never been able to have that luxury.
Well, and I learned this about some of the women soccer players on the Canadian team. So here's something that you may not know. When they sign these deals to play in the European leagues, they include their marketing rights. And so they sign them away and they sit there and nobody activates them.
What?
It's included in their contracts that the marketing rights, while they're over playing for, Lyon or whoever, that they get an agent and the rights are inside of that. And then the agents do nothing. So we need to change that structural contract model that gives them the agency that we see from male athletes. And so that to me is something that, you know, and this is, we need to do both sides. We need to educate the industry, but we also need to educate the young athletes saying, don't sign those contracts. Not the only contract you can sign, but they've been doing it for years. And so that's why we don't see them. I didn't know this until recently. And I'm like, they signed their rights away. And that's why we don't, because then they don't, well, we're not going to make a deal for them.
So I'm still stuck on the fact that Tom Brady has three people doing his social media. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So practically speaking then, let's wrap this up because we can do a part 2 and 3 and 4 about this new model, but we're already building infrastructure. We're call to action to do that. What else can our listeners grab on to, practically speaking, that we talk about in the report? I'll start with, and I think you talked about it right in the beginning, is we let the data tell the story. So we need to create the data, get the data, disseminate the data, know where to find the data that we need, because there is a lot of good data out there, and help that change the narrative that people are interested in women's sport. It's a good investment, and build the new narrative. So that's my practical thing. Use the data.
I think the next thing is let us know if we've missed something. I mean, this is a constantly shifting market, right? Like we're interested in, like you said, we could do podcast 3, 4, 5. We can do another version of the report. What do you think's missing? And where do we need to get data that we don't have? That to me is key, so we tell the right story. But I think there's so many people out there, you know, that have started to read this report, that have listened to industry started to talk about this. Now tell us what we're missing and how we can build it out. That's key, I think, practically from my end.
Mm-hmm. I would add on to that too. You know, getting connected, you know, expanding the stakeholder base of the people who are reading this report, right? We need to be working as a team here. I think in the report that we put in the fall, you know, no one person is going to solve women's sport. We all need to be collectively working together. And I'm a big believer in that multiplier force. So the more people that we can have read this report, the more people that we can have giving us feedback to help refine this report, I think we all have a part to play in getting the word out there and figuring out what the next steps are so that we can collectively move this to the next phase and not just kind of have this stalemate where it's, you know, for as long as I can remember, we've been saying this is the year of the woman. And I think the sentiment of this team, the sentiment of where we want to see this go is that we get to that next level with the report. And that's going to require us all working together, whether it's the academics, the industry, the coaches, the athletes, we're all going to have to get on the same page and combine our resources.
And I'll just chime in with, you know, we want it to be a movement, not a moment. Yeah, you know, as Katie just said. So what that means to me is buy women's sport merchandise, buy tickets, tune in. If your local broadcast, you know, or media is not covering women's sport, tell them that that's not okay. You know, we've got to take action at this point in time. You know, they're starting to pay attention, but like you said, Nicole, with the data, we can actually back up the fact that, you know, there's value there. And, you know, we all have a part to play with things that maybe seem simple but aren't. You know, invest in women's sport yourself.
And we all have agency, right? So we talked about athletes have an agency, or Gen Z have an agency, and, you know, manipulating or changing, improving the industry in the direction that they want, right? So every single one of us have agency, as in where do we spend the dollars, but we also have agency to change the narrative, right? So when you see something, it is not a one-off. So it is a part of the larger trend. So it is important for us to, for every single one of us to publicize it and, you know, pass on the information and be part of the movement.
And I will just add from a historical perspective, we've seen, you know, several moments in the history of women's sports where there seems to be movement and there is visibility, but then it goes away. And so I think that we need to really continue to pay attention beyond these, you know, highlights of, okay, there is this big event and all of a sudden there is a lot of attention to women's sports and then it goes away, right? And so that, that as our team has been talking this entire podcast, really that this needs to be a structural systems change rather than moments or individual athletes or individual sponsors or individual teams that are doing something that perhaps is sustainable, perhaps it's not, right? And so I think we need to continue to pay attention to these continuities in women's sport and see what model can really be sustainable long-term.
Mm-hmm. And I would end with that there are going to be a lot of forces working against us creating, promoting, and sustaining a new model that benefits women's sport, because precisely it disrupts the status quo, which privileges men. And for years, decades, sports sociologists and feminist scholars have been arguing that if we actually gave the same amount of attention to women's sport, that it might become more popular than men's sport. And I think, and you can agree or disagree, listeners, that I'm seeing glimmers of this with this new model. It's like, there's something happening here, and if this really takes off, the status quo really might shift, and that is going to be really frightening for a lot of people in the system. So, with that in mind, okay, here's the deal. If you see proof of interest in women's sport, take a picture, post it, hashtag it, here's proof. The more we change the narrative that there is interest in women's sport collectively, it helps change the system a little bit, okay? And secondly, we disruptors on this screen and on this podcast would like to invite you to join us in drawing attention, as Jada was saying, to disruptions in sport that disrupt the male model and draw attention to that. So use a hashtag, disrupt HERS, H-E-R-S, And please download the report, read it, let us know what you think. What is missing? What can we add? How do you want to activate your own expertise? How do you want to join us in creating this new model and driving a new model for women's sport? So with that, we are signing off, myself and my fellow disruptors, to go and disrupt the male model of sport that privileges men. So stay tuned for the next episode.